I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about issues of defamation and discrimination, of the processes of bigotry and intolerance. We're going to talk about how prevalent defamation is and the damage it does. There will be an interfaith community lecture on the subject next Thursday. My guests include the man who will deliver the lecture, Rabbi David Fox Sandmel, Director of Interfaith Affairs for the Anti-Defamation League, Rob Saylor, Executive Director of the Christian Theological Seminary Center for Pastoral Excellence, and Rima Shahed, Executive Director of the Muslim Alliance of Indiana. Please join the conversation by calling 866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or finding us on social media. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about defamation and the instances of it here in Indiana and elsewhere. The hook for this is that there's going to be an interfaith community lecture next Thursday evening that's presented by the Christian Theological Seminary and the Jewish Community Relations Council. If you'd like to join the conversation, and it is an important conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimits@wfyi, or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are the man who is going to be delivering the lecture, Rabbi David Fox Sandmel. He's the Director of Interfaith Affairs for the Anti-Defamation League. He'll be in Indianapolis for the lecture next Thursday. And we have with us, returning to the show, Rob Saylor, who is the Executive Director of the Christian Theological Seminary Center for Pastoral Excellence, and Rima Shahed, who is the Executive Director of the Muslim Alliance of Indiana. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Wonderful
Thank
to be
you.
Here.
Well, Rabbi Sandmel, I'm going to start with you and just ask you to give us a little taste, maybe some of the themes that you are going to be addressing in your lecture next Thursday.
Well, I'm going to be talking about the New Testament as a Jewish book and how reading it in that way can both bring new insights into understanding the New Testament and also help in avoiding some of the anti-Judaism that has been associated with interpreting the New Testament.
And Rob, I'm going to ask, what was the motivation for pulling together the interfaith kind of coalition to discuss this topic in a community forum?
Well, I think Rabbi Sandmel has really named both of the goals, in that, on the one hand, as a Christian seminary, Christian Theological Seminary is very interested in thinking about not only the question of how can we live humanely and peacefully with our neighbors of all faiths, and indeed no faith at all, but also as Christians, we're very interested in insights into our own scripture. Christian Theological Seminary for a long time has had a commitment to precisely the project of taking seriously the fact that Jesus was a Jew and that the New Testament was a book largely written by Jews. And again, that has implications not only for how we understand our own scriptures in a religious sense, but it certainly has ethical implications, political implications for what it means for Christians and others to be in the world in a way that fosters communities of life rather than exacerbating hatred and division.
Rima, obviously, you represent a faith tradition that also has had to deal with some inflammatory rhetoric and other issues of outright defamation and discrimination. I mean, there's no other way around it. How important do you see this kind of dialogue to being able to move past those kinds of divisions?
Well, MAI has worked for many years to foster a climate of tolerance and inclusion in Indiana for all Hoosiers. We have been committed to civil liberty, and we urge all Hoosiers to engage in civic duties and in civic actions to make Indiana a better place, a more friendly and open place.
Well, let me toss this out, and I'd like to hear all three of your thoughts on this, because these are not new problems.
Right.
You know, and I think as long as people have worshipped to whomever or whatever they have worshipped, there have been elements of distrust, of animosity, of all of the things. Where does that spring from? What is the core of where those impulses come from? Rob, I want to hear your thoughts first.
Speaking as a Christian theologian and as a pastor in the Lutheran Church, I'll actually take that a step further, John,
okay,
and say that the Christian tradition has been at its absolute worst and at its absolute most damaging when it has lost track of the fact that it springs from Jewish soil. And unfortunately, from very early on in the Christian tradition, even the first few centuries of the existence of the church, the tensions were already there, and what we might call anti-Jewish or anti-Semitic sentiments really began to spring forth. Those came to full flower in the medieval period, and we all know within recent history what some of the terrible fruits of that have been, the Holocaust, ongoing persecution, ongoing tension. On the flip side, I would say that the tradition has been at its best when it's taken seriously the fact that Christians and Jews do share a common heritage, not only textually, but in terms of how we see, in our language, how we see God active in the world, healing the world. So the history, though, is quite brutal. And those of us now in the 21st century, I think, are still at a point where we need to reckon with the devastating effects of that.
Rima, where do you think the roots of this spring from?
Well, I agree with what Rob has to say, but I also want to take it further in that all three Abrahamic faiths, I believe, have the same values. We all, you know, we all stem from basically Abraham and Adam, and we all hold the same values, I believe. This is what I believe. But I think that throughout history, there are been times where Christians and Jews and Muslims have all been persecuted. And I think it all comes from fear. I think it's all fear-based. And I think that if we took a time to actually get to know one another and our beliefs, that we could kind of move past that fear and understand each other as well as accept one another.
Rabbi Sandmel, picking up on that, where does the fear come from? Because, in many cases, I mean, the most obvious example of outright persecution in recent times has been the Holocaust, and I'm hard pressed to make an argument that in any way the Jews presented a real threat to Nazi Germany. That there was nothing in that was grounded in anything resembling reality. So where does the fear spring from?
But that's a complicated question. I think it. I'm going to throw out a few possibilities. One is the fact that I think people often need scapegoats to make themselves feel strong, to make themselves feel somehow better than other people. I think we've seen a tremendous amount of very disturbing scapegoating in our public discourse in this country during the presidential campaign.
You're anticipating my next line of questioning. That's okay. Thanks.
I was wondering how quickly we would get there.
Yeah.
The other thing is that people's fears are not necessarily rational, and so the fact that the very small population of Jews in Europe in the early 20th century nonetheless generated that kind of feeling among a good deal of the population, speaks to that irrationality. It also speaks to the ability of people to manipulate that fear for their own political purposes, for their own power, and so forth.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about defamation issues in Indiana, in the United States, and in the world. here on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Rima, you know, we've made reference to the presidential election. Frankly, we don't even have to go that far. I mean, we've got a ban on that is in the courts right now on Syrian refugees, and a lot of that, you know, the rhetoric that was associated with that was anti-Muslim in tone. I'm not going to ask you to explain why people might treat you badly, because I don't think that they have to justify that. I think probably, though, I'd like for you to talk a little bit about what it is like to be the focus of that kind of distrust and fear.
It's truly heartbreaking. It is truly heartbreaking. As a mother, I have three children, and to hear my six-year-old and eight-year-old in the back seat of the car thinking, well, if so-and-so president was elected, maybe we'll have to move. What will happen to us? For them to fear because of their name, their first name, their last name, for my children to come to me and say that, Mommy, why are we weird? I mean, I think that we're as normal as any other person, and I agree with the rabbi. There have been moments in history when there have been different groups of people that have been the scapegoat, and unfortunately, I do think that we are that community today. And I urge political leaders, leaders in our community, our imams, our priests, our rabbis, our pastors, to be the people that our communities look up to, and for us to all take a stand, not to spread this fear, but to be open. And therefore, I think that all of the congregations and communities will be more at peace with one another. It's a very unusual time of political unrest, and it is fearful.
Rabbi Sandmel, could you amplify on that a little bit and talk about, you know, what the cultural social costs are to that kind of, you know, that kind of omnipresent fear and distrust?
Well, I think the a couple of things. The first is that it distracts us from the real problems at hand. Whether it is the challenges that Germany was facing in post-World War One and trying to rebuild and so forth, or whether it's the challenges we have in the United States today in terms of the real threat of terrorism versus the imagined threat of our fellow Muslim American citizens, issues of jobs, issues of climate control. Perhaps some of these are things that are too big for us to wrap our heads around, so it becomes easier to vent our fear, our anger against some group. The cost there is that we then don't address our real problems, and we end up with a very divided society. We end up with people who are discriminated against, who have violence perpetrated against them, and children in the back seats of cars asking questions that no child should have to ask.
We are talking about defamation, discrimination, fear of others, basically. Debbie, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Well, I had a different thought a minute ago, but now what I don't understand is all of our religions have the same tenet, and that is to love one another. Why does that get lost? Always gets lost. It's like it doesn't even come up in our reaction to someone else who's different than we are.
Good question. Thank you very much for the call and the question. Rob, I'll throw that one your way.
Well, there are what religions teach, but then there's also the fact that religion as a human enterprise is always caught up in political, material, economic realities throughout history. And so words like love, justice, and so on, they express noble ideals, but they can also be twisted to serve certain kinds of agendas and to serve certain kinds of ends. So I think part of the answer you know, in my own tradition, we would talk in terms of human sinfulness and so on. But I think the fact that all of these noble teachings are caught up in these politicized realities goes a long way towards explaining the fact that division persists.
We are talking about instances of defamation in Indiana, in the United States, and around the world in this troubled time. The hook for our conversation today is a lecture that's going to take place next week that's being presented by the Christian Theological Seminary and the Jewish Community Relations Council. Rabbi David Fox Sandmill of the Anti-Defamation League will be presenting the lecture. He is one of my guests, along with Rob Saylor, who is also with Christian Theological Seminary, and Rima Shahed, who is with the Muslim Alliance of Indiana. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about instances of defamation in Indiana, America, and around the world, in anticipation of an interfaith community lecture next Thursday evening, which will be presented by the Christian Theological Seminary and the Jewish Community Relations Council. My guests are Rabbi David Fox Sandmill. He's director of interfaith affairs for the Anti-Defamation League and will be delivering the lecture next Thursday. And also Rob Saylor, who is executive director of the Christian Theological Seminary Center for Pastoral Excellence, and Rima Shahed, who is executive director of the Muslim Alliance of Indiana. If you'd like to join this important conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named Dave did and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Dave, welcome to the program.
I just wanted to say how much I appreciate, especially at this time in this country, that you're bringing this up. I was privileged to go to Boston several years ago and study with some people called Facing History, Facing Ourselves, and it was about the Holocaust and genocide in general. And it's so important, I think, for us to speak up. One of the things, if people in Germany had spoken up about what was going on, that could have been stopped in the very beginning. And I'm so frightened by what I'm constantly hearing on TV, xenophobia, racism. And I just think it's important. And I also want to thank you for the human touch when a mother talks about the impact of that kind of speech on her children. So thank you, all of you, for doing this today.
Well, thank you very much for the call and for the comments. Dave and Rima, it sounds like you have a fan.
Thank you.
So I'm gonna start with Rabbi Sandmill and sort of pick up on Dave's point here. You know, what is it about this moment in history? Because it does seem that the rhetoric, a lot of the rhetoric that you only heard in the fringes of American culture and our American political dialogues now has moved into the mainstream. What accounts for that?
I agree with that assessment, and that's one of the things that disturbs me the most. Regardless of who ends up winning the election, it feels to me like this is a bad analogy, but it seems like we've opened a Pandora's box that we had been trying to close. And that what used to be unacceptable in public discourse has become acceptable once again, and overcoming that is going to take much longer than the specific ramifications of this particular electoral system. I think that. Social observers and people who study politics will be able to respond to this better than I can. But I think that we are still seeing the effects of the of the economic downturn that began in 2008. There are a lot of people who lost a great deal then and have not yet recovered from that. I think we're moving towards a demographic tipping point in this country, and that is also making people uneasy. And to go back from what we, to go back to what we were talking about mm-hmm. earlier, when you have that fear, people can play on that and exploit it.
Rima, I'm since obviously people are responding to the personal touch here, how do you explain to your children what is going on right now, why they're hearing stuff like that?
I generally try to stay away from political conversations with my kids. I don't think that six-year-olds and eight-year-olds, mm-hmm. you know, need to be. They can't wrap their heads around it, unfortunately. And what we're seeing around Indiana and what we're seeing around the country, you know, these anti-defamation, you know, these defaming mosques and universities. The, like Hazem Bhatta said, our General Secretary of ISNA, the Islamic Society of North America, the spray paint does get washed out. But the fear that they have enlisted in our instilled in our communities, that stays. And it is scary for all of us, not just for my children, but for many other children. And the fact is that they're now second, third generation American Muslims. And we have been here for many years, and we will stay.
Rob, your thoughts on why now?
I agree with everything that's been said, particularly the point about demographic shifts. I think it's impossible to separate this question from the pervasiveness of racism and, indeed, the structures of white supremacy in this country. I also think that the erosion, not only of the social safety net in the economic sense, but more just the broader existential sense that, okay, there will be someone to take care of us if we fall. I think in all sorts of ways, we're seeing that confidence erode. And when that confidence erodes, there grows a sense of, okay, I've got to take care of me and mine. I've got to look out for myself and my family. And I think that territorialism, I think that sense that the other whom I might have looked upon as a friend, I now need to look upon as an enemy. All of those existential dynamics are tied in with the political and material realities that have been mentioned.
We are talking about defamation in Indiana, in the United States, and around the world. Joe, welcome to the program. Joe, you with us?
Yeah.
Oh.
This is Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Thanks so much for
Certainly.
Taking my call. I appreciate it. I'm a frequent listener, first-time caller.
Well, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
I believe that we have to look at the reason that so many who want to control are trying to do so with fear. Fear seems to be one of the biggest motivators, and I suppose it always has been. And right now, using that fear, fear of safety, fear of bodily harm, fear of losing your job, it just plays such a huge part in society today. On the way to Indianapolis this morning, I heard about a Republican who was elected mayor of Anderson, Indiana, who recently, and he's no longer the mayor right now, but he recently got sued by about 14 people who worked for him. But they, when he was running for the job, they tried to, they were physically engaged in trying to promote the Democrat who was running against him. So once he became elected and took office, he fired him. I think there's another, it just adds to the total scene that's being played out and how fear is being used. Building a big wall to keep out people who are different from us. You know, that was tried in China and didn't work. I think that frequently the media has some responsibility mm-hmm. In not calling those who are using fear as a blatant tactic to take hold of the actions of ill-informed and the poor. And, you know, I think that's something that we all need to recognize, and we need to call it when we see it. And thank you for taking my call.
Oh, certainly, Joe. Thank you. We'll try to get some responses. Thanks very much.
Uh-huh.
Rabbi Sandmill, I'm going to ask, reframe this, because obviously we've talked about the fact that fear is a lot of this. Mm-hmm. How many elements, you can look at instances in history where the fear at some level was organic. There are also times when people deliberately and in a calculated way attempt to manipulate those fears or to exacerbate them. How much of that do you think is going on now?
I think a lot of that is going on now. I think that, and I think it's some of it is quite calculated, and I would even say cynical. When something seems to work, people will try it again. And I'm not sure that I'm saying anything particularly new that I haven't said already in our discussion, but the fear factor, it just is a huge part of our current debate.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named John, and if you'd like to reach out to us via Twitter, you can find us at WFYI. John says that the biggest defamation issue is people not calling out polite but despicable. He names Indiana legislature, Governor Mike Pence, for human rights violations. Is the some of the problem here, and I'll start with Rob, but then I want to hear Rima right after that, that we have not or do not speak up forcefully enough when we encounter this sort of defamation or discrimination, Rob?
I think there's a lot to that. In the aggregate, the real damage that comes from xenophobia, racism, and so on is not necessarily the broad displays, say the KKK burning a cross on someone's lawn. It's the small jokes. It's the little digs. It's the quote-unquote non-PC speech that happens among folks. One of the things that really challenges, for instance, the ministry, which is where I make my home, is on the one hand, pastors and religious leaders try to strive for a certain kind of neutrality or a certain kind of ground in which to have these conversations well. On the other hand, it's becoming increasingly clear that at a certain point to remain silent or to remain neutral, as such great heroes of the faith as Desmond Tutu and others have reminded us, to be neutral is in fact to give aid and comfort to oppression and indeed to evil. So I think absolutely one of the things that we need to cultivate within ourselves is the courage to say sometimes those small paper cut type remarks or actions, when taken in the aggregate, do so much damage that we can't allow them to stand without being challenged.
Rima.
I think that one of the first steps is that we have to urge our lawmakers to pass a hate crime bill. We are one of five states currently that do not have a hate crime bill that has been passed. I think that there has to be some sort of punishment or what have you, fear for people that they cannot go around and, persecute people or go into different places of worship and spread their hate, because currently there is no crime for that in our state. And I think that's one of the first steps. We should not stay silent on that. We need to urge our lawmakers to pass this bill.
Where is it?
Can I jump in on that?
Yes,
for just
please.
A moment?
Yeah,
and
please.
With a little bit of a plug for my organization, which has a campaign, 50 yeah. States Against Hate, mm-hmm. Which is addressing precisely this issue. And in addition to the five states that have no hate crimes legislation, there are a number of others that have inadequate hate crimes legislation, and there are no standards, national standards or requirements for reporting hate crimes. So it's very difficult to track them. So I think this is a very important issue, and I would encourage people to get involved in that.
We are talking about defamation and discrimination here on No Limits today. If you'd like to join the conversation, send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Kenny has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Kenny, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I just want to say, I think it's over the past few years, it's been very positive, particularly since President Obama's been in office, that these discussions are much more frank now than they used to be. Before his coming into office, I really see a difference in this country. Many people have not noticed it, but I really have. I'm a veteran of the civil rights era in the 60s, so I can see the difference. But I want to just raise a couple of quick points, if I may. You know, there's a context for anti-Semitism in certain quarters of Christianity that goes back 2,000 years. That blames the Jews for, you know, for killing Jesus, and you know, has gone through various periods where Jews were forcibly converted, you know, during the few hundred years ago.
The Inquisition.
And even today, it was just sort of humorous to me the other day. Ted Cruz, and I don't mean to single him out, but in fact, I don't know what he personally believes, but there's a brand of evangelistic Christianity today that professes that they embrace Israel, because when the rapture comes, the Jews in Israel will either have to convert or will go to hell, and that's what they believe. And so if that's not bigotry, I don't know what is. Second point is that we live in a state called Indiana, and the Indians have been forcibly ejected from this state over the past. We're celebrating its 200th anniversary right now, but we really need to atone for the fact that the Indians are basically not here anymore. And third point, our August state used to be one of the centers of the Ku Klux Klan, of course, in the early 20th century, and not even at that long ago. So, you know, these things are still with us today. But as I started saying from the beginning, I think it's very positive that humanity, ethical humans are trying to evolve, are evolving out of this, and putting these issues on the table, and I appreciate this program that you're having today.
Certainly, and thank you for giving us some food for thought, Kenny. We really appreciate it. So, Rob, I'm going to throw that one your way first. And really what Kenny is talking about here is that we all live in history's embrace. We all live in history's shadow, and there is an awful lot of history we have to deal with. How likely is it that we're going to be able to escape from some of the worst parts of that history?
Well, in that sense, I'm actually perhaps not optimistic, but I'm hopeful. If you go back to the New Testament itself, particularly Paul's letter to the Romans, a lot of what was happening there was an attempt by the early Christian communities to work out, okay, how can Jews and Christians, how can those of Gentile backgrounds and those of Jewish background live together peacefully in these communities? And we still have those texts, we still have those trajectories, however much they've been a minority report within certain aspects of the tradition, as the caller pointed out. So I think there are wonderful attempts by Christians and others to try to live into those possibilities in a way that, again, fosters peace and reconciliation. So we have the material, and we have people working on it. It's just a question of what will win the day.
And this is obviously a large subject. I think it's one we're going to have to pick up again on the other side of the break, because I think we've got two issues. We've got the fact that the people who have practiced the discrimination, but also how easy is it going to be those who have experienced the defamation? How easy will it be for those who have experienced defamation to surrender the wrong that has been done to them? Right. We are talking about defamation and discrimination here on No Limits in anticipation of a lecture next week that will be presented by the Christian Theological Seminary and the Jewish Community Relations Council. My guests are Rabbi David Fox Sandmel, Rob Saylor, and Rima Shahed. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking, we are talking today about instances of defamation in Indiana, America, and across the world. In anticipation of an interfaith community lecture next Thursday evening that will be presented by the Christian Theological Seminary and the Jewish Community Relations Council, my guests are the person who's going to be delivering the lecture, Rabbi David Fox Sandmel. He is the Director of Interfaith Affairs for the Anti-Defamation League, and Rob Saylor, who is Executive Director of the Christian Theological Seminary Center for Pastoral Excellence, Rima Shahed, who is Executive Director of the Muslim Alliance of Indiana. Just before we went to the break, we talked about sort of history's grasp and how likely we were to be achieve success at getting out of its grasp. And I wanted to talk, Rob sort of addressed the question of, you know, of what we live in and the instructions we've had. But there are two parts to that. One is sort of reconciling with the wrong you might have done in the past, or your ancestors might have done. And some of it is also reconciling or letting go some of the wrong that has been done to you or your ancestors. How likely are we to achieve success with the second piece of that? Rabbi Sandmel.
Well, I think that it's a balancing act in a certain way. We certainly don't want to forget the past, but we also don't want to become, in a sense, prisoners of the past. If we take a look at Jewish-Christian relations today, we find, with the Roman Catholic Church as the prime example, but also with many Protestant churches, that there has been a sincere effort to repudiate those aspects of past teachings and past behaviors that have caused harm to the Jewish people. I mentioned the Roman Catholic Church, but since you're a Lutheran, I'll mention the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America and the work of its consultative panel on Lutheran-Jewish relations. These kinds of activities, in a sense, challenge the Jewish community to respond and to deal with the Christians that we see.
Appears we have lost the connection. Rabbi Sandmel is joining us by phone. We'll try to get him back. Rima, I'm going to ask you to talk about how long do you think it will be? I mean, you've mentioned already your children, are asking difficult questions. That's something at a formative age that they're. How hard is it going to be to? And I'm assuming you probably had similar experiences as a child, as a young person yourself. How hard is it to get past that? Or is it possible to get past it?
I generally remain optimistic. I think that conversations like these, organizations coming together, and our leaders showing our young people the way is the answer. And I am generally optimistic that if we do move past the fear of one another, and if we try to understand one another and understand that this lingo just divides us, it is not helping any community. Rather, it's hurting us all. It is hurting our great nation. That I'm fairly optimistic that we can move past this. We can reconcile with past, and we can move forward as one.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Sarah. And if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Sarah asks, taking into account the world strife caused now and in the past by religious beliefs, do you think the positive effects of religion outweigh the negative on a grand scale? Rob?
It's a wonderful question. And I guess my initial response would be to say, at the end of the day, there really is no such thing as religion. There's no essence of religion that somehow is always practiced everywhere. At the end of the day, there are communities of people and there are their beliefs and how those beliefs are put into practice. I think, speaking as someone who, again, occupies a certain religious tradition, there's arguably no one that has more of an interest than folks like myself in naming truthfully and painfully the ways in which religious traditions have caused pain and have been abused. But at the end of the day, since we take our orientation from, you know, in my case, my belief that God is at work in the world, healing the world, it's not so much a question of can we dispense with religion or not. It's more a question of how do we really get beyond, again, the cliches and the stereotypes, and ask, how do communities exist in the world in such a way that fosters the kind of life that we think God wants the world to have versus giving in to the historical tendency to twist these realities? So religion is here. Mm-hmm. It's diverse. And the question is, going forward, what can be done with it?
Rabbi Samuel, welcome back to the program. A lot of storms between here and I suspect where you are. We're glad to have you back. We got we had a question from a listener about whether the positive effects of religion overall outweigh the negative effects, given the sort of division and animosity through the ages that faith-based differences have provoked.
Well, I would agree that there is no such one thing as religion, and that religion, even as a concept, does not act in history. Individuals act in history. People act in history. And people can either use or abuse the teachings of their traditions. And when they use them for good, and especially for the common good, we see all kinds of wonderful things that happen. If we think about the history of humanity, much of our art, our culture, our music, our drama, our literature, universities, hospitals, charitable organizations, all of these come out of religious traditions. And all of these, I think, people would agree, have been beneficial. It doesn't mean that there aren't aspects of traditions that can be used for negative purposes, but it really, I think, comes down not to placing the blame on religion, but putting a challenge before people as to how they are going to live their religion in the world.
We are talking about instances of defamation and discrimination here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Certainly.
To follow up on the religious question, I know it will be unpopular, but one of the huge problems really is the increase, or at least the increased profile of religion in politics. It promotes us versus them ideologies. Secular government is an absolute must, and we're in a place where an atheist or an agnostic is completely unelectable in the U.S. My argument is that we need to depoliticize religion or remove religion from politics. Justice Scalia, as I'm sure you know, is quoted as saying that he literally believed that demons roamed the earth. With, you know, when faced with that kind of illogical thought, what hope do we have to sort of be able to get along with each other? We need to reconsider things like the religious tax exemption for religious organizations that engage in political action. We need to remove the business of religion from politics. I think secularization is the path to less hate. Religion has done a great many incredible things, also a great many horrible things. I understand that Nazism was, you know, nominally secular, but if you look closely, it really was a religion. Most Americans believe that we're a Christian nation, and we have to emphasize that we embrace all religions and or none to get on a path to less strife.
Thanks very much for the call and the comments. Rabbi Sanmel, I'll throw that one to you first. Is theocracy the problem?
Well, we don't live in a theocracy. I guess I would say that, a theocracy would again depend on how it was administered. One could, I suppose, have a just theocracy, just like one could have an enlightened despot. I also think that the caller raises some very interesting questions. I'm not sure it's so easy to sort of bifurcate between religion and politics, or certainly for the individual who is involved in politics, somehow to bracket their own religious belief and religious values in the way that they choose to legislate and to govern. I think the question, at least for us as Americans, where we do have an establishment clause and where we are a multi-religious and multicultural society, how do we create a place where people have the freedom to express their religion, and at the same time ensure that same freedom is guaranteed to all. It's a difficult balancing act.
Real quickly, Rob, because we get calls backing up.
I would agree with Rabbi Sanmel, and I would also want to be clear that certainly speaking for myself, and I think speaking for a number of my friends from various faith traditions, when I talk about love and respect for my Jewish, Muslim, and atheist neighbors, when I talk about things like a democratic process that is open to all, that's not me setting aside the particulars of my religious tradition. That's me trying to live them out, however imperfectly. So again, I don't think it's a question of simply a zero-sum game between religion and secularism. I think the more interesting question is, what is within our religious traditions or our own philosophical traditions that causes us to lean into values like love, respect, justice, and so on?
Gotten an email from a listener named Jarrett that takes this in a different direction. It says, how can we look at the discriminatory vitriol as something beneficial? After Indiana's first RFRA battle, Religious Freedom Restoration Act battle, we saw signs pop up all over storefronts in greater Indianapolis. This business proudly serves everyone. We now know just how much the undercurrent of hatred exists locally and nationally. We know the challenge ahead of us, a challenge that we might have been ignoring before, a challenge that we are now forced to tackle. Maslow reminded us that we must first deal with the basic physical needs of life, food, shelter, etc., before we can begin to tackle the human spirit. I love this show because we have such a smart audience. I really, really do. I really do love doing that. What I would say is that's sort of an argument, too, that sunlight is a kind of disinfectant, that the more we bring this out into the open, the better and more likely we are to be able to solve it. Rima, I'm going to give you the first crack at that one.
I think there is a real danger in hate speech, when our lawmakers and government officials pass such kind of bills. I don't think that they understand what kind of damage that is being done and how it is a Pandora's box for more racism to spread, for people to just blatantly hate one another based on their sexual orientation, their race, their religion, the way they look, or how they came to America. And I think that we do need to understand and that we have to start accepting one another. Otherwise, the divisions will continue to grow.
Rabbi Sanmel, I'm gonna give you a crack.
Well, I think that when we are challenged by things that happen in our culture, in our society, it does present us with an opportunity. The events of 9/11, that was a horrible moment for our country. And in the wake of that, there were two reactions. There were some people who took that as an opportunity or the justification to target American Muslims or people who they thought were American Muslims for violence and for discrimination. But there were others who took that as an opportunity to reach out and to get to know people whom they might not even have seen before. Again, it, a lot of this comes down to the choices we make. You know, when we hear hate speech, or when we hear someone who says what is being said hurts me, do we then take the opportunity to understand why that is, perhaps to learn something that we didn't know before, or to learn about people whom we may not have known that that much about before? I've learned a great deal about Islam and about the Muslim community over the last 15 years that that I didn't know before. And there are lots of reasons for that, but one of it is because that community suddenly became visible to me in a way that it hadn't been before.
And Rima, you wanted to jump back in. I'm going to give you about 30 seconds, and then I want to ask Rob a question.
Without giving my age away a little too much, I was a junior in high school when 9/11 happened. And my brother and I were two Muslim students at Cathedral here in Indianapolis. And when 9/11 happened, I stared at that TV screen first thinking that, are we watching TV? Is there a movie being played? I could not understand that this was happening. And then the second thing that happened right after 9/11 is two Muslim students at Cathedral High School here in Indianapolis, one being me and my other, my brother, and our pastor held a service just for the students to understand what my brother and I stood for. And I think that sometimes we do take for granted how lucky we are to live in the greatest nation, that we do, there are people that want to understand and love one another.
Rob, I got to ask, with the lecture is next Thursday, logistical details here. If people want to attend, how do they go about doing that, and is there a cost?
Sure. The information is available on our website, www.cts.edu. And all of the arrangements and so on in terms of location. And if there are any requests for special arrangements, they can be found there on the website.
Well, I'd like to thank that will have to be the last word, although I want to thank all of our listeners for the great questions, the great comments. We could have talked for about 3 hours on this subject. I'd like to thank my guests and all of our listeners for what has been a really, really provocative and enlightening conversation. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.